Chapter 10 Trusting a Most Unusual Drow. Drizzt and Catibree hurried along the halls of Upper Mithril Hall, rushing to the summons of King Conorad. The dwarf eyes, scouts and watchposts higher on the mountain, had brought word just a 10-day before that the Cerberin was starting to clear of ice, so this sudden call was not unexpected. The third month of Chess would turn to Tarsac in just over a 10-day, and winter was finally letting go its grip upon the land. As they approached King Conorad's war room, they heard Athrogate bellowing out some ribald song about beards and drapes and rugs, and then heard a responding laugh, dwarf and female, that rang familiar to Drizzt. He smiled and nodded at Catibree.
"Ambergris?"
she asked, and he nodded again. The dwarf guards moved aside as the couple approached, though one, Drizzt remembered him as Rollo, the young warrior beside Winko in their unfortunate encounter, shot a glare at Drizzt as he passed. Inside the room they spotted Brunner sitting beside Conorad, with General Dagnabbit and Bungalow Thump huddled near. All four turned to regard them, and all four wore grim expressions. Not so grim were Amber and Athrogate, though, standing off to the side, laughing heartily and exchanging bawdy rhymes.
"We're to go, Elf," Brunner said.
"Tomorrow,"
Bungalow Thump added.
"Soon as the second sun rises in full west and low of the darkening."
Drizzt nodded, but it took him a moment to digest that strange explanation of the time of day. The brightest hours on the surface were mid-morning and late afternoon, the spans where the sun was under one rim or the other of the blackened sky, but not below the horizon. That second short period of relative light had come to be called the second sunrise, even though, by that point in the day, the sun was actually lowering.
"North door,"
Conorad explained as the pair walked up, and the dwarf king shook his head skeptically.
"I would expect faces beaming with eagerness," said Catibree. "But what I find is dour and grim."
Even as she finished, Athrogate erupted in side-splitting laughter, and Amber began to giggle so ridiculously that she could hardly finish her song of two couples, a dwarf and his firbolg bride, and his sister and her firbolg husband, brother of her sister-in-law.
"So the dwarf's got a sister who's smiling so wide," she chanted, catching her wits when she saw that the other six were now looking her way. "And his own wife's not knowing when her husband's inside."
Athrogate howled and slapped his knee.
"Enough," ordered Conorad, and he turned his glare fast to Bungalow Thump, who had also begun to chuckle. "And yourself?"
he asked. Dagnabbit couldn't resist a bit of a laugh.
"Funny to think on it,"
Brunner said dryly. Conorad sighed.
"Pray be gone, the two of ye,"
he said to Athrogate and Amber.
"Go and play the night away. We'll be fighting tomorrow, eh?"
The two started out of the room with Athrogate muttering,
"Probably not much fighting for us coming out if I'm knowing me old friend."
"I cannot but agree with the wild dwarf," Drizzt explained to the others when Athrogate and Amber exited the room. "And true enough from my own experience.
Orcs have built a powerful force up there after them elves came in," Conorad said. "Sure, but there's 100 big new tents north of the gates."
He nodded to the side, where his engineers had constructed a scale model of the entire region in great detail. Conorad led the others over there and nodded to Brunner, who stepped up.
"North door," he said, pointing it out on the model. "Lots of orcs here, just outside it. And a huge force of orcs and giants here," he explained, moving his hand to the north of that position. "The main force about Mithril Hall," General Dagnabbit said.
"Aye, and there's a good run for them to Keeper's Dale, to the Cerberin Bridge, and shortest to the North Gate all downhill,"
Brunner added, pointing it out on the map, moving his hand along the model mountain passes to each location. The orcs had grown wiser, Drizzt realized, nodding. Or more likely, the dark elves guiding them had shown them a better setup to support and hold the siege. Now they had nominal, though still sizable, forces at all three of Mithril Hall's gates,
but with a reserve ready to roll in for support in short order, and in shortest order of all, as Brunner had pointed out, to the north gates.
"We'll have most of the orcs about Mithril Hall on us afore the last of our boys have cleared our gates," Brunner finished.
"Amber came in alone?" Drizzt asked.
"Hole opened in the north gates," Bungalow Thump explained. "Just a hole, and out fell the girl. A man of four me boys could even get a look. Poof, the hole's gone, and the door's thick and solid again."
Drizzt nodded. He had seen such a portable hole put to use before, and by the same most unusual drow he was certain was now directing this escape.
"No change of plan?" Catty Bree asked. "North gate," she said.
"Said them elves are ready, and with a trick or two planned for them orcs and giants," said King Conorat.
Drizzt looked to Brunner and shrugged. "You've seen that one at play before," he reminded the dwarf.
"Aye," Brunner agreed. "But think on it, elf. Your friend's got himself in trouble many the times with them matrons and menzo barons on. Now's his chance, eh?"
Drizzt stared at him curiously. But Catty Bree caught on and looked at Drizzt with sudden alarm.
"What?" Conorat and Dacnabbit said in unison. "Might be a good way for your friend to get in the good graces of them snake-whipping witches," Brunner elaborated.
Drizzt pondered the possibility of Brunner's suspicions for just a moment. It made sense, he had to admit. Surely any drow could be offering quite a prize to Matron Mother Quenthal and the others by tricking the dwarves into opening their doors, and perhaps a bigger prize still for delivering Drizzt O'Erden to them. "No," he said, shaking his head and growing more confident with every movement. "He would not betray me, would not betray us, and certainly would not betray Athrogate, not like this."
"He's been known to play games within games," Catty Bree said.
"But this would be no game," Drizzt replied. "If what you fear came to pass, then many dwarves would fall. Indeed, Mithril Hall itself would fall. There would be no turning back. His stone would be cast forevermore, and that is something he is never wont to do."
"Cast against yourself," said Brunner.
"Aye, and he would not do that. Not with such irredeemable finality. He would not do that to Zacnaphane, who was once his friend." Catty Bree and Brunner exchanged looks at the mention of Drizzt's father. They shrugged in unison.
"Second sunrise, then,"
Brunner told Conorat and the other two, and none of them looked particularly confident.
"You're sure it's no trap, are ye?" Conorat asked. "Because that's what I'm hearing, but sure not what I'm seeing in your face."
"Aye," said Brunner. "No trap. A most unusual one's this fellow. But he's more than a bit of honor about him, even though I'm not for understanding at all."
"Nor would Lady Cynophane betray us," Drizzt said.
Conorat turned to Dagnabbit and Bungalow Thump in turn, then back to his three guests.
"Second sunrise," he agreed, "and may Clangadin sit his hairy bum atop of them orcs."
A volley of arrows rained into the encampment, centered on the massive tents of the frost giants. The arrows were more of a nuisance than a danger to the behemoths, since there was no concentrated fire in those first volleys. Orcs ducked for cover, goblins ran around screaming and trying to form some sort of shield walls, but the giants came out strong, rocks in hand, ready to pay back the hated elves for the deaths of their kin across the river in the Cold Vale. As predicted by Cynophane, the giants had altered their tactics, and when they charged the tree line they believed held by the elf archers, they did so in close ranks and with a leading barrage of hurled boulders. But the elf archers were long gone, fleeing even as their third volley of arrows went up into the air. The two persons remaining in the stand of pines thought the boulders no more than a nuisance, less so than the arrows had been to the giants. In charged the giants in tight groups, massive clubs lifted and ready to bat elves from the trees, or fall upon the lithe folk and crush them flat. but as they neared, several of those trees bent outward suddenly, pushed to their breaking point, and from the two openings came gigantic, horned, coppery heads. The giants skidded across the snowy ground, falling all over each other to be away. But not fast enough. Tasmakella and Ilnazara spat forth their acidic breath, melting the closest behemoth, burning and biting it all behind. There were more than 200 giants in that vast encampment, and had they thrown the whole of their power at the dragons in coordinated fashion, they surely would have overwhelmed the worms in short order. But not like this, not caught by surprise, not in the sudden reversal and shock of seeing the enemies with dragons of their own. And though only two had shown themselves, who knew how many more might be lurking nearby? The giants, wisely, were more concerned with fleeing than fighting, and they turned as determinedly as they had charged, stumbling and staggering to get away. Trees bent and snapped as the dragons came forth, bursting from the line in all their terrible splendor. They leaped up into the air and breathed again on the giants, this time enveloping the groups in clouds of thick gas. The dragon sisters quickly turned and swept back behind the pines, disappearing from sight, their role done. Those giants they had hit with a second-breath weapon were not burned, their skin was not melting from biting acid, and they continued to run, but more slowly, much more slowly. And now the elves returned, and the magically slowed behemoths made wonderful targets. Group commanders selected targets methodically, and the arrow volleys that reached out came like a swarm of stinging bees. One giant dropped, a second stumbled and fell bloody to the snow. Far in the back among the tents, not many of the orcs and goblins had even seen the dragons, but they recognized the rout in front of them, and if 200 giants could be so easily and completely turned around, fleeing in abject terror, then what chance did they have? And so the rout was on in full, with the main encampment of many arrows that besieged Mithril Hall splintering in confusion and terror. At that moment, down the sloping ground to the south, the north gates of the dwarven citadel banged open, and out came Clan Battlehammer in all its glory, led by a furious drow ranger, a monstrous black panther, a chosen of Mialiki, and the legendary King Brunner Battlehammer himself. Winko Battleblade and his cousin Rollo came out of the north gate side by side, banging their swords on their shields and hungry for battle. It had been a miserable winter in Mithril Hall, short on rations and constantly prodded by orcs and ogres, goblins and giants, and darker things still, and now it was past time to pay back the ugly dogs. There was one other who might need a lesson, they both knew, as did their friends around them, and so they kept their eyes on the drow Doerden as they rushed along the snowy incline leading from the doors. Drizzt had helped pave the way for the filthy orcs of Many Arrows to launch this war. Drizzt had forced the Treaty of Garum's Gorge upon Brunner, as Winko's telling went, in a clever ploy to allow the orcs to gain a foothold here in the Silver Marches, right on Mithril Hall's doorstep. After all, was it a coincidence that the Dark Elves leading the legions of Many Arrows bore the surname of Doerden? One misstep by Drizzt here, and Winko's gang of 20 were going to fall over him and pummel him into a pile of mush. So they watched Drizzt now, as the battle was joined, orcs rushing from their encampment to meet the breakout. Curiously, Drizzt and his two companions, the dwarf and woman claiming to be Brunner and Catti Bree, broke to the right, away from the main group. The drow led the splinter group, or rather, his bow did, with a stream of mightily enchanted arrows swarming into the gathering of orcs and ogres at that flank. Just the three of them. No, four, Winko and the others realized, when the giant panther appeared, leaping upon an ogre and bearing it to the ground beneath raking claws, splintering from the main force of General Dagnabbit to engage an entire flank of monsters. What game could this be?
"He's to reveal himself as the traitor he be, or I'm a bearded gnome," Winko cried to his fellows, pointedly using the same phrase that King Brunner had made famous a century and more before.
With the main fight right in front of them fast turning to a rout by Dagnabbit's mighty force, the fiery Winko led his band off toward the right flank, not to reinforce Drizzt and the others, but to kill them when they turned back upon Mithril Hall and showed their true allegiance to the invaders. Rollo followed that up with a call of huzzah, but his voice trailed away, At that moment, Drizzt hit the orc line in full stride, scimitars in hand. Rollo's mouth stayed open, as did the hanging jaws of all of Winko's band. Drizzt leaped and twirled, wide-held blades slicing orc faces. He dived to the ground and came up fast, and came up stabbing, and more orcs fell away. Now the young dwarf, who claimed to be Brunner reincarnated, joined the fray, his axe strokes launching orcs two at a time as they tried to press in. Drizzt flashed back in front of Brunner, clearing a thin swath of ground in front of the dwarf, and as soon as the drow had passed, Brunner charged in his wake, shield-shouldering one orc to the ground, splitting the head of a second with his axe. In the span of a few heartbeats, it seemed, several orcs and an ogre lay dead. The woman cried out, and Brunner turned and retreated straight for her. The panther launched itself into a mighty leap that carried her over the ducking orcs. After dispatching yet another of the ugly brutes, Drizzt ran faster than Winko and the others could begin to believe. The speeding drow leaped just as Catibree's tremendous fireball went off behind him, right in the midst of the pursuing monsters. That moment, that image became frozen into the minds of the onlooking dwarves. The drow high in the air, his dark form silhouetted by a brilliant explosion of roiling orange flames, his hands moving to sheathe his scimitars even as he flew as if propelled by the blast. He landed on his feet but threw himself forward and to the ground, tucking into a roll and turning as he went to come back to one knee facing the orcs and somehow, impossibly, with his magical bow back in hand. The fireball was still breaking apart when the first lightning arrow shot off into the diminishing conflagration, taking a smoking ogre right in the chest and sending it spinning to the ground. Fires burned on tents, fires burned on orcs, fires burned on ogres, some still standing, many on the ground in the half-melted snow. And one greater living fire remained, and it too took to the battle, striding into the midst of a trio of coughing, smoking ogres. Already badly wounded by the fireball, the brutes had no chance against the wizard's fire elemental, and as the first fell under the weight of a heavy, flaming punch, the other two tried to stagger away. But the panther came back in full charge, the dwarf howling his battle cries, and the drow letting fly an arrow with every step close behind.
"Cousin," a subdued Rollo whispered, "you're a bearded gnome."
By the time Drizzt, Catibree, Brunner, and Guinevar rejoined the main dwarven battle group, the rout of the orc encampment was well in place, with few monsters still fighting.
"Ah, but here they come," Bungalow Thump warned the companions when they roared in beside his gutbusters. "Get ye ready, for we're in it now."
His words seemed perfectly on target. They had charged out well aware that this encampment was nothing more than a stopgap force, set to slow down any attempted breakout until the main force could arrive. And now it seemed that main force was indeed on its way, for up ahead, the mountain slopes were dark with swarms of orcs and goblins, with charging ogres and giants rolling down in fury, it seemed, to overrun the dwarves.
"Brace!" came King Conorad's call, echoed up and down by the under-commanders. "Shield wall!"
Drizzt looked to the dwarf king, who was not far away, and saw his doubts clearly on his face.
"He will call for a retreat into the hall," the drow said to Brunner.
"Nah!"
Bungalow Thump protested, but Brunner couldn't help but nod. The force charging down at them seemed truly overwhelming. Unseen by the dwarves and their allies holding position in front of the gate, one man outran all the others, easily outpacing even the lithe elves and the dragon sisters, who were now back in elf form, in the wet spring snow. Afafrenfir felt as if his body was but a shell, an image created to give shape to his life force, which was without weight. With huge, swift strides, he bounded after the retreating monsters, and whenever he came upon a straggler, he was swift to the attack. Outlashed his hand or his foot, always properly aimed, always with the strength of a giant behind it, and always singularly lethal. Afafrenfir wasn't striking with a corporeal punch, kick or knee, or even headbutt, but rather with his very life energy concentrated like a deadly spear. Again, his physical form merely gave shape to the blow, following the flow of his inner strength into the unenlightened target. He knew that Grandmaster Kane was guiding him now, shaping his energy and throwing it forth. He welcomed the intrusion, basked in the lesson. "Carry no doubts," the voice in his head told him, as he bore down on a giant, one that had noticed him and was turning to meet the charge. Afrefrenfear felt as if he was flying when he launched into a running leap. Over the swinging club of the monster he flew, over the giant's shoulder, and as he passed, he felt his hand shaking suddenly, tiny quivers moving in a blur. He slapped the giant across the face, not hard but solidly, and Afrefrenfear felt strangely weary, as if he'd just run the breadth of Faerun. He flew down past the behemoth, turning as he dived into a graceful roll that set him upright and on his way as if he had never missed a step, and by the second stride he felt his strength returning anew. Trust was all he heard, when he instinctively and silently questioned what had just occurred. Afrefrenfear had no more time to consider the incident, or even that the giant was now giving chase. A group of orcs had stopped in front of him, turning for a fight, weapons bared and ready. And without a thought, Afrefrenfear willingly leaped into their midst, scattering them with his unexpectedly bold assault. They were back soon, though, in a circle around him, a dozen enemies closing in methodically. Closer, closer, close enough to prod at him with their weapons. He leaped straight up into the air and spun. Around he went, lashing out with his foot, with his hand, and again blocking each and every stab or slash with his hardened shin or simply the delicate turn of a well-placed hand. He turned a second circuit and a third, and the orcs fell away, one kicked in the face, a second swept over its own spear, a third taking a fast triple punch in the face as the monk finally touched down. And up he went again, right away, just as high and spinning once more. Too fast for his enemies, too quick to the strike or the block. When he landed that second time, only a handful remained, outlashed Afrefrenfear's sidekick, shattering an orc's kneecap. Around went the monk with a full circle kick, driving that wounded orc into the next in line, and as those two tangled, a third tripped up and dived in at the monk. Out went Afrefrenfear's open palm, square in the face of the bending, overbalanced orc, using its momentum against it and shattering its neck bone. Without even thinking of the movement, Afrefrenfear backflipped right over the trio of orcs coming in behind him with leveled spears. He landed behind them instead, squarely and ready, his stabbing fingers diving into one's kidney, shattering a second spine, and as the third turned, so did the monk, his rising circle kick snapping the spear shaft and driving through and up under the creature's chin. It flew away, leaving Afrefrenfear gaping in disbelief at the power that coursed through his body. He could hardly register what had just occurred, and only the closing giant snapped him from his trance. "What do I do?" he silently asked. He was no match for a frost giant. But his answer came as the energy coalesced inside of him, gathering into a tangible ball. His body trembled, his eyes rolled up to show the whites, his arms reached forward, shaking. And he felt this energy thrown from his corporeal form, thrown into the charging giant, and there it lashed like lightning. Afrefrenfear staggered back a step and stared incredulously as the giant skidded to a halt, shaking and trembling, slightly at first, but gaining momentum with each passing heartbeat. Soon spasms rocked its body, bouncing it around. The behemoth held its feet for a few more heartbeats, though its massive sword went flying away. Then to the ground it went, to its back, where it jerked and thrashed violently, ending with a sudden scream, arms reaching to the sky, mouth wide. And as if that scream took with it the last of the giant's energy, the behemoth simply fell limp. Before he even went to it, Afrefrenfear knew that it was dead. From a slap, from a trembling hand, Grandmaster Kane's quivering palm. As King Conorad's call echoed along the line, the dwarves formed a tight shield wall ready for a tremendous impact. But the monsters weren't charging. The horde was in full flight, a terrified frenzy. Those heading directly for Mithril Hall seemed suddenly to realize their error and veered left and right, scattering to the side trails, even the giants.
"What?" Bungalow Thump demanded, clearly dismayed. "Catch 'em, boys, and kill 'em to death!"
Off went Thump and his brigade, hollering and giving chase, until General Dagnabbit ordered them back.
"Close ranks," she called. "They're baiting us to split asunder!"
More than one gutbuster grumbled in protest, but these were Battlehammer dwarves, loyal and obedient. Despite the monstrous flight, the fighting surely wasn't finished, and the sounds of battle erupted once more just north of the gates of Mithril Hall. Catibri threw more devastating fireballs and brought forth a second elemental. Driz sent lines of magical arrows burning into monstrous flesh. Bungalow Thump got his wish and launched his furious gutbuster brigade headlong into the midst of a swarm of orcs. And Brunner and Conorad fought side by side, two great kings of Mithril Hall joined in common cause. Despite the fact that most of the supposed orc reinforcements had run away left and right, the battle wavered on the edge of disaster for a short while, until a barrage of arrows swarmed down from the hills, thinning the orc press. On came the elves of the Glimmerwood in tight ranks, 300 strong, 300 longbows working as one, sweeping aside the nearest monsters as they patiently made their way to the dwarves. "Well met again, King Conorad," Sinifane said to him when the allies had united, the battle all but over, with only a few pockets of resistance remaining.
"Aye, and all for your hugs," said another woman.
And the group noted the approach of Ambergris and Athrogate, both with weapons covered in the blood of their enemies set on their shoulders.
"But be quick about it, eh?"
Drizzt could hardly contain his smile when yet another walked up, a man who seemed to be carrying no weapons at all, yet who, Drizzt was certain, had played a large role in the victory.
"Well met again," Drizzt said to Afafrenfir, who bowed respectfully. The monk started to reply, but Ambergris cut him short.
"Time for that later, eh?"
she reminded him.
"Indeed," said Sinifane. "Have you properly divided your forces?" she asked King Conorad.
"Brunner's leaving with yourself," the young king of Mithril Hall answered. "And them that's going with him know their place."
"Then we must be away at once, to the boats on the Cerberus banks and across the river into the cover of the Glimmerwood," Sinifane answered.
"Aye,"
Conorad agreed. He looked to Brunner.
"How I wish I might be going with ye, me king."
"Your place is in the hall," Brunner replied.
"Would Brunner have said the same for himself when he'd been king?"
"No," Drizzt answered before Brunner could. Conorad nodded and smiled.
"Aye, but Brunner didn't have Brunner to go and lead his army," he said. "I'm knowing me place in this, for the good of Clan Battlehammer, and I'm knowing Brunner's place is out there."
He nodded his chin to the east.
"And I'm knowing that we'll be together again afore summer's on in full," Brunner replied,
and the two shared a solid handshake. Then Brunner and his companions, along with Bungalow Thump and the Gutbusters, and 300 of General Dagnabbit's finest soldiers, went off with Sinifane and the elves. King Conorad and General Dagnabbit watched them go, while the remaining dwarves around them raided the orc encampment of all its worthwhile supplies, returning to Mithril Hall with arms full of much-needed food. The orcs and their monstrous allies were back to the battlefield in short order, a huge force prepared now for the surprises that had befallen them that late afternoon. They chased the last of Conorad's forces back into Mithril Hall, then argued and grumbled that the dwarves had found a way to resupply, and that the wretched elves had helped them. And the angry forces of Many Arrows had no idea that the elves had not been alone in their retreat back across the Cerberus.